when you are able to isolate, like, which part of the brain is this child in, it would make sense to be like, I should balance them by going to the other part of the brain. But in fact, you should meet them in the part where they are, right? So if you've got a child who's on a big old feeling side, you need to go over there and attune to the feelings so that you then are like in a position of credibility to them almost to be like, yeah, we're on this side. Now come with me over here to this left side and let's build a story around this that makes sense so that you're together attuning to them where they are. And then you can be the guide who walks them up the stairs slowly over time, over and over and over until they learn how to do that without someone holding their hand.
My name is Jessica Hover, and I did curl my hair for you, and then it rained in Los Angeles. So welcome back. And this is my friend.
I'm Lane Dealing-Trilland, and from where I'm sitting, it's got a very like Kate Moss, cool girl, tussled situation. So I hope that you guys can see that from your angle. But if that's not what it looks like from over there, just know that from over here, I'm like really notorious to myself for not checking to see what the back of my hair
The back of my hair in these in the reels that you post, the back of my hair is the death of me.
That's like, all I feel about myself. Okay. That's good to know because I never feel that way about you. But I always feel that way about me.
Yeah.
So that just I think is like helpful to know about our own like dysmorphic.
Yeah. No, and also because I come here and I'm like, it's just a podcast. Mm-hmm. They're just gonna listen to us. But Instagram is just visual.
Yeah.
So they still are going to see that I didn't put effort into my hair.
From the front.
Today I did.
You look really good.
Thank you so much. Welcome back to the podcast, guys. Oh, wait, this is?
I think I said I'm Lane Dealing-Trilland, but this is Very Good Enough, a podcast from Very Good Mothers Club. I can't remember either, but we double covered.
We're so excited that you're here. This is season 5, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
We're inside it. We're in the thick of it. And today's episode is one that I'm going to learn a lot, I think. I'll probably chime in, but like this one, I just want to hear from you.
Mm-hmm. Today's episode is going to be me speaking in very just like regular person, chatty friend terms about brain development.
Yeah.
And why it's like so vitally important, why it absolutely changed the way that I interact with children. Like, People tell you that things will unlock things all the time. People will tell you this is the secret. People will tell you the number one hack.
Right.
If anything's ever been a hack, it's been human brain development, like understanding what's happening inside so that we are not so absolutely effing confused by like the total mystery of the behavior that we see in front of us.
Mm-hmm.
Like we are always so baffled by other people. You know, other people are so important and other people are such a mystery to us.
Mm-hmm.
We walk around like nervous about them, but excited about them.
Mm-hmm.
And like we've always been that way since we were little tiny children, just being like, that's the most exciting thing. What about her? And I want to touch her face and I want to see her and I want to think about her, but I don't know what she's thinking about.
Right.
And she says stuff, but she doesn't say the whole stuff, right? Like this other person is always such an enigma to us.
Mm-hmm.
And we try to split that into categories. We try to say, well, men are like this and women are, couldn't possibly understand them. or we talk about children. We'll just wait till they're human, you know?
Yeah.
People say that about toddlers all the time. They're not really human yet, which I understand. But also, it's really just saying, I don't know what that is.
Yeah.
That's a little different for me in some way that I don't know how to bridge. And also, I'm a little bit of a mystery to myself.
Right.
I do things I don't want to do and things I want to do I can't seem to achieve.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's so much happening with us all the time that we don't totally know why. And we can leave it a mystery. You could just learn nothing about brain development and then just like really sort of enjoy the like odd quirk of your own self and of other people and be like, wow, I'm constantly enamored and surprised by other people.
Yeah.
But for myself, I like a little less frustration. I like a little less confusion. And the things in me that get triggered or emotionally heightened, that happens less when I'm not confused. Okay. When I understand why something's happening, when I can put a thing into like a little bit of context, then I can process it actually through the four quadrants of my brain, which we'll talk about, okay. You know, but like having a little context, I feel like makes things much more reasonable.
Yeah.
So mostly what I'm going to talk about today is like the first, maybe third of this book. It's called The Whole Brain Child. We've talked about Dr. Dan Siegel many a time on the podcast.
I have yet to read this book, but Lane said if there was one parenting book ever to read, it's this one. So I'll read it. Mm-hmm. She also said she was hesitant to do a podcast episode about this because she doesn't yet feel ready to come at you as a teacher on this topic. So mm-hmm. I said, well, then could you please come at us as our friend Lane, who knows more about this topic than we do, and just share kind of from the heart. So that is the tone you're getting. Later in life, I wouldn't be surprised at all if you do teach on this. It seems like something you care enough about that you would put together something. But yeah, I'm excited to hear from you, especially as someone who has no idea what's inside of that book. Mm-hmm. But I have three children.
Yeah.
And a lot of moms in my life, I would love to know more about brain development and see if it could help me even as I leave here and go parent my own kids.
Yeah.
So lead me. Take me away.
Here we go.
Okay.
So we're going to talk about this in like the most just like simple, regular terms, mostly because I don't know what the other terms are.
Okay.
Right? Like I can't tell you which piece of your brain is called this and what its exact function is. Like partly haven't learned it. Also mostly haven't learned it because I'm not that interested. I'm really only curious about this kind of thing in as much as it's like directly useful to me in my day with a 2-year-old or like in my immediate understanding of like why I did that thing that I did not want to do. You know, like that's so just like very broad strokes here. Like I just want to make these little tiny toddlers make some sense to you. And then you guys go like be the parent however you want. Like that's my overall goal. And so I just want you to get a little bit of clarity on the inside. So basically your brain can be broken up into four parts. Okay. They're like four quadrants of the brain essentially. And I think we've all talked about like left brain and right brain a lot in our lives. People get called like, oh, he's such a left brain thinker. Oh, she's like such a right brain, like feeler, artist kind of person. And it is often very gendered like that. Mm-hmm. So the left part of your brain, like if you think about it as like four pieces, but like divided by like a little X, not like an up and down cross so much. Okay. So that there's like an up one and a bottom one and then a left one and a right one. Is that correct from your perspective? For the listener, I'm making some hand gestures that I don't know if that's left and right, but you guys know what left and right is.
Yeah.
Two sides, top, bottom, two sides. We all kind of know like the left side of your brain is the logic side, the reasoning, sequencing, like this came before this, like that kind of stuff. Like math happens over there. Engineering happens over there. Any kinds of like narrative sequencing, we use it for symbol recognition, like when we're reading and stuff, we know like, oh, that symbol makes that sound. Mm-hmm. Those kinds of like very simple, logical, rational links, all that stuff happens very physically, like electricity moves from neuron to neuron on the left side of your brain. That's what you're using to do that kind of stuff. You're driving and you're like looking around and you're like, okay, it's going to be my turn. And then that person's turn. Oh, that person has a blinker on. So they're going to move. So then I'll move up in the line. Mm-hmm. Like all that kind of thinking is happening on that left side of your brain.
Wow.
And then very physically on the right side of your brain is connected to all of your emotions, all of those like the sophisticated like sort of swirling ribbons of all your little feelings that wrap around each other. Most of your understanding of your relationship with your body is on that right side of your brain. A lot of memory gets stored in the back and the right side. Social interactions, like our perception about the social interactions, right? So from the left side of the brain, I could say, Jessica came into my home. We embraced one another. She set her things down. I can tell you the sequence of what happened when Jess walked in a little bit ago. But like the right side of my brain would be the part that's like, oh my gosh. And then Jess got here and I was so excited to see her. And we started to talk about her day and what happened this morning and how it felt to, and we talked about ovaries and then I wondered how she's feeling about the ovaries and the sickness. And then I thought about like, oh gosh, I got to tell her, like the left part of my brain would have been like, I need to tell Jess the things that I wrote down that we could be talking about this morning. Cause we're going to record a couple of episodes, but the right side would be like, I need to express to Jess how I'm feeling about maybe we'll do this topic. This is kind of the why of, this is what I think they would get. This is how I think it would be experientially for me and her to talk about this, right? Like that larger picture, rounder, softer, more connected, like all of that stuff is actually little pieces of electricity, little tiny neurons sparking back and forth between one another on this right side of my brain. But when we sat down and I picked up my little notebook to tell you about things that I thought we could talk about today, the left part told you a list while the right part filled in all the context for you and considered like how it was bouncing off you and how I feel. And those two things working together is like, that's the maturity of my adult brain crossing the two sides. Those two sides have learned how to fire together, send their own little electrical impulses back and forth. And so we would call that integrated. We would say that's vertically integrated, right? That's horizontally integrated. I struggle with left and right. I struggle with horizontal and vertical, but
yeah, we got it.
I can tell you on this like back and forth line, which is her horizontal, like the horizon, if you will.
That's right.
horizontal integration between those two halves of my brain.
Is maturity. That's what's happening as we mature.
Yes. Okay. We're going to talk mostly about top and bottom, and that's why I'm kind of saving that. But using this left and right to just say like healthy brain development integrates all four of these quadrants. They all get to kind of work together. Sometimes you use one more than another because they're specialized, and that's why the brain is like this, so that the parts can get really strong. And so then when it's like, oh, I really need this logic piece so bad right now, like it can send all its energy over to this other part and we can really use that part.
Then could that also be why if you're having a day that feels really emotionally draining, then when you are required to operate more logically, it can feel like, I don't know what's going on. I don't have my facts in order.
It would be a lot of effort for my brain to then pour its energy back over to that other side because I've been really stuck over here.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk a lot about getting stuck in one quadrant or the other.
I had that recently where I began something that really needed my brain to be like in order. And right before I went into it, I got in an argument with someone I love. And it was so, it felt like very heavy inside of me. And then I went into my next thing and it was like my brain left me. I was like, I don't know how to do these things that I know how to do, but it takes the energy to organize the thoughts. Yeah. It's weird. But this is interesting to think about it like that.
And it is, that's such a good example because it is an actually, like we really kind of forget that our brains are physical. I think for me, certainly, I sometimes think about my brain and my mind as being the same thing. And the mind is such an abstract metaphysical concept. But like I have a physical brain. Something's actually happening in there. When activity stops in my brain, I then die. When there's activity in my brain, I am alive. Like my life is very connected to this physical thing.
This organ,
and that can be understood, which is very hopeful, and it's also just very real. I think it takes some of the pressure off of, like, what do I not have like the moral and emotional stamina to do this meeting after I'm emotional, like after I've had this emotional conversation, I can't just like find it within my character to make the choice to focus in this meeting. Like, no, that's like not about my character. That's about like I used something.
My body needs to reset.
Just like if I carried something really heavy in this arm, oh my gosh, this arm is tired now, you know, or if I've been very focused on doing something physically in this way, I now need to reorient myself to like really shift. If I've been sitting for a long time, I have to shake it off before I'm ready to just run. Like this is your body.
Yeah. And then you think of like little kids having to use one side of their brain, maybe in school. And then, I don't know. I'm just thinking like then it would make sense. They would need a wind down moment before we expect them to jump into like, no, treat your sister right. No, don't do that thing wrong. It's like, just give them a moment.
Yep.
Okay, keep going.
So the goal of growth, like healthy brain development could be defined. There are tons of ways to define that, obviously, but simply as these four quadrants, like integrated.
Okay.
They work well together. They know how to communicate really clearly and easily.
But we still don't know what the top and bottom are. Oh, this is
a
mystery.
Let's get there. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Okay. So your downstairs brain. Really, it's the back. It's like down and back if you care about like the physical part. Okay. And then your upstairs brain is really this like front part at the actual like top and front behind your forehead. It's your prefrontal cortex and stuff like that. Your back brain is stuff like your hippocampus and your amygdala. Just using words that we've all heard a little bit here and there to be like, you know, we all get like little smatterings of this throughout TikToks that we watch, et cetera. Yeah. But that's just kind of where that stuff is. Okay. So, but we're just making things two-dimensional. We've got a left, a right. We've got a top, a bottom. That's all we're worried about right now. Your downstairs brain is your basic functions and your instincts. It operates your heart. It operates your lungs. All those things that are automatic that we're born knowing how to do. It's what's in charge of all that stuff, blinking. Okay. It's in charge of the reflex to like when you get the sun in your eye to like flinch away from the sun. It's the part that it's the really, really important, this key piece. It's the part that's in charge of danger. It's the part that's keeping you alive. Like its job is to keep you alive. So it runs the operating system, the automatic operating system, and then it keeps a freaking eye out for danger. And if it perceives you to be in danger, it 100% takes over in order to keep you out of danger. It's the thing that makes your arm fly out when you have to stop quickly at a stop sign to protect, even when there's nothing in the seat, even when it's your grown-up friend.
Yeah.
You know, like it's just the thing that's like, danger.
Yeah.
It's the thing that makes your hand pull back before you realize that you touched something hot. Like its job is to keep you alive. So we love it. Nobody's here to denigrate the back brain. Nobody's here to call it, you know, your like lizard brain, the part that like, ugh. And we talk about it sometimes as like, ugh, that thing that has to be controlled so that we can be. But like, no, thank you. That would like my heart to pump.
Yeah.
Would like myself to jump when I drop something, when a baby rolls off of the sofa.
Yeah.
And there's this thing that this part of me that dives. Like that's, we want it. It's so good. It's so important. It also stores like all of your deep long-term memories and your deep, deep emotions. Mm. And it's very connected to your body. It's the piece of your brain that's paying a ton of attention to your physical form. So your right brain and your back brain are the pieces that are really connected to your physicality. They're connected to your body and your instincts. And the what I would describe as like those deep places of you. Your left brain and your top brain are a lot more for processing and thinking, things that you're very conscious of. And we have a high value for these things. Obviously, they're very important. But they're sometimes a little bit less depth to them. You know, they're not that like visceral.
Okay.
They're not as visceral. They're much more processing. So this top front part of your brain, that is the part that is for higher, what we call higher level thinking or executive functions. Planning, decision making, what's that word? Delayed gratification in the interest of something you want more.
Whoa.
It's the ability to like put space between my impulse and the action. It's my ability to like actually dream something up for myself, to choose what I want, to make moral calculations, to make choices that feel a little worse for me but are better for us as a whole. It's my ability to push through frustration because I can see farther. I can see far enough ahead to know that like what I feel like I want is to lay down. What I actually want is to, I don't know, what I actually want is to paint this painting. What I actually want is to have a business that functions. What I actually want is to throw my husband a fun birthday party.
Sure.
I feel tired. If I were just to go by my impulse, I would stop doing this planning. I would stop doing this work. I would just eat things that taste nice and watch television all of the time. But what I actually want is this life that I want. So I'm going to tolerate the frustration of the thing that I'm experiencing for the thing I actually want. Like it's, oh, it's so beautiful. It's like the piece of us that can decide. It's the piece of us that has actual ambitions, that has drive, just makes choices for us down the road. Now, your bottom brain comes into the, you are born, done, it's ready. It's one of the only pieces of your brain that's fully functional the second that you're born.
Wow.
Like you come out, you cry because that was painful and you need a deep breath because you're breathing for the first time. Like you were aquatic in this little belly. You come out and you know to breathe because you have this back brain piece. You know to flinch when something hurts. You know to cry out when you need help. You know how to like nestle when it feels nice. Like you know how to let like rooting, all the rooting instinct to like get in there and find that sweet, sweet milk. Like it poops for you. It realizes like, ugh, this doesn't feel good in my stomach. It spits it out. Like that whole thing is there. Your basic functions and your instincts, they're already there. So just to take it to your tiny children, like that baby has all those instincts. That baby's body is functioning. That two-year-old body is functioning. And if you recall the piece that I said about danger, it's got a real strong amygdala, which lets it know like, oh no, tiger. Oh no, I didn't like that, right? So this, all of that function of like the automatic flinching and that really automatic sense of keeping myself safe, keeping myself alive, it's totally intact that second that baby comes out. Now, your upstairs brain is under construction until you're in your mid-20s.
Wow.
All that decision-making, all that behavioral gratification, like delayed gratification, all of that ability to take space between like impulse and action, that child is going to work on that until they're 25, 26, 27 sometime. Like,
wow.
So what you have in front of you, no matter how old your child is, unless you're looking at your adult child, like is someone with a really solid bottom brain and an absolutely under construction top front part where they're making choices, where they're making moral considerations, where they're able to hold somebody else's perspective and make a choice that's good for that person, even though it's not what I feel like doing. Mm. That is so important. It is so important to know that what they can do is protect themselves, keep themselves alive, like have this running alarm system that lets them know, am I in danger? Am I not in danger? And that they do not have the front top part that tells them like, oh, alarm bells went off. I'm going to look around and assess whether I'm in danger and then be like, no, I'm not in danger, and set that piece back down. The top and the bottom are not integrated yet. Hmm. What we're doing is building bridges. Like we as adults working with children, taking care of children, are giving them experiences that build connections between left and right and top and bottom, so that over time we construct really good bridges back and forth, up and down, so that all four of these pieces work together in an integrated way. Mm-hmm. Like that's what brain development looks like, is wow, all four of these pieces all offer their vital parts of humanity. They all take over in important moments, right? And do their thing only, shut the rest of it down. And then when that moment's gone, then everything kind of opens back up, energy goes all around, and it flows comfortably again. So that's the long-term brain construction goal.
Okay.
I'm going to take a sip of something.
You're doing so good.
Thank you.
I'm glad you made that distinction of like they have the ability to have the alarms go off, but they don't have the ability to register like, so don't do the thing. Because when you're saying it, I had this image of Jules the other day like scootering towards the street, high speed on a hill. Actually, it was like so dramatic because I screamed and burst into tears and like ran to the street. And a dad also sprinted out and like caught her, and she was fine. She burst into tears because she was so confused as to like why we all were freaking out.
Yeah.
Even Wilson was like, I was so scared. But interesting, like she has that thing, probably the thing that made her burst into tears. Mm-hmm. Like this was alarming, but I don't really understand which part was the alarming part.
Yes.
Yeah. So you're teaching them like the alarm is going off when there's cars in this street going really fast and you're scootering towards it.
Uh-huh. Absolutely. Right. What she's looking at is like the thing that she's doing, right? She has no future planning in her brain. There's only now. Mm-hmm. That's why we talk about this a lot with toddlers, especially with tantrums, is like there's only now and there's only what they're looking at. Literally nothing else exists. They couldn't possibly think about other people or the future or what they want later. There's just this because they're under construction. And she's having the time of her absolute life. She's on a complete adventure.
Yeah.
She's exploring in a way that's really vital to her brain. Her brain is like, we gotta know what's gonna happen here. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, everyone's screaming and yelling, and she's been abruptly halted. Yes, it's super alarming for her.
Yeah.
Now, that's what should have happened. It's fine that that was alarming for her.
Yeah.
It's okay that she got scared and cried. Yeah. In fact, she should get scared and cried and cry in a moment like that.
to learn not to do that.
Because what she doesn't know is happening mm-hmm. is that she was about to put herself in terrible danger. Mm-hmm. So we do want her to match the image of heading mm-hmm. toward the street with that feeling of incredible alarm. Like we want those pieces of data to go in there. That is going to store in the back, and the back's going to go, oh, interesting. Sometimes when I see this image, there's a real, there's like, whoa, scary. Oh, mm-hmm. we don't like that feeling. Interesting. I should redirect her.
Yeah.
I should redirect, when we see this, perhaps we ought to redirect over time, right? She's going to, that's like what, how mm-hmm. she's going to process that.
That's good.
I want to make sure that we're getting into like very practical examples of the way that these things function. Let's do left and right again first, because I think it's a good example, but a little bit less like vital. Mm-hmm. to me, that top and bottom brain, when I learned about that, I was like, oh, this is why everybody's freaking out all the time. That's all. I'm in this room with tiny people freaking out all the time because they basically only have a downstairs. And when their downstairs is like firing, it blocks them from going upstairs. They can't come back up and talk to me. This is what's happening in this tantrum. This is what's happening when this person is screaming at me. They're trapped. Mm. Now, there's earlier stuff that I am going to want to revisit with them later when their front part is available, their top front part is available. But right now, they're stuck in the back.
The back is where they're tantruming, mm-hmm. like they're just out of control.
Yeah, I mean bottom, I'm trying to do top and bottom, I forgot, sorry.
The bottom is when they're losing their mind.
Yes, okay. Yes. And so, okay, now I have to go down with them and like help take care of this part where they're in a danger loop for themselves mm-hmm. so that we can soothe that out and kind of get that gate open and travel back up together. And then we can deal with all of this other stuff that's going on. Like it's such a relief to me to know like, okay, this is what they are capable of. This is what they're not capable of. So like my frustration level can go down because this is not just a person who's deciding to scream at me. This is not a person who's refusing to be rational. This is a can't situation. Mm-hmm. Okay, great. I can have total compassion for can't. I can be really patient mm-hmm. around helping you through something that you can't do on your own as opposed to it all kind of coming back to like this child must grow the character to choose not to yell. Like that's not what we're doing.
Yeah, developmentally here. They're not there yet. Mm-hmm. When they're older, yes,
absolutely.
When they're little, they're just developing.
Right. So one of the things I love about this book, and I do really recommend that everybody read it. And on the day that this comes out, I'll make sure to like link it on socials and stuff so you guys can find it, and I'll put it in the show notes. One of the ways they talk about construction a lot, they talk about it as like a house. They talk about the upstairs and the downstairs as a house, and they talk about a staircase. From the top to the bottom, right? And they like give this helpful visual of like, so you've got a totally built out basement where you can absolutely live. But once you come up, there's just like construction tools everywhere and there are potholes and there's like tarps over everything. Like it's non-functional up there right now. But we want to be heading up frequently and working on this construction project together. We want to be looking for ways to help build this top part and especially to build this staircase. So that from this downstairs situation, we know how to get up really consistently. Oh, I was going to talk about left and right first. Yeah, let's do it. Let's stay with me, friends.
Can we access in toddlers left and right very young? So like basically in their basement, they have left and right? Because I'm in the visual. I'm in the house.
I think the visual is a little bit limited.
Okay.
To upstairs and downstairs.
Got it. There's no left and right in the visual.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yep. Okay. I think separate. Let's think about it as layers. Like if we had two transparency slides, you know, and we've got a left side and a right side, and then we've got an upside and a downside, and we could lay them on top of each other, and we will. We want to.
Yeah. Okay.
But I think about those two things kind of separately.
Okay.
So like in terms of getting nice flow between your logic and your emotions. One of the examples in this book is of a kid gets into a car accident with a babysitter and the babysitter has to go to the hospital in the ambulance. And the child is now for weeks telling the mom like, Sophia, and then making like an ambulance sound. And the mom, because she's read this book in the example, is like, yeah. You remember what happened with Sophia? Absolutely. You guys were in the car and then the car was upside down. I remember that. Mm-hmm. Yes. And then Sophia had a seizure and she went into the ambulance. And then we saw Sophia again. Yeah. And like talking through the story of what happened.
To connect the dots.
Every time the child is bringing that thing up. Mm. Now, our natural impulse might be to be like, oh, this child's been through something traumatic. And we don't want them to have to think about that. Yikes, that's scary. We want to move them away from that story because that's a scary thing that happened. Mm. If we did that, that memory might get stuck in only the kind of like right brain side of, I'm literally pointing at my left brain while I talk about
that. Right? And I'm not even registering.
It's sort of like that right brain feeling of just like the really heightened emotions of that night. The thing that's important to that child in what they're expressing is Sophia got taken away, mm-hmm. right? Like if he's making the ambulance sound and saying Sophia, hypothetically, like that's the piece that was whoa. Mm-hmm. So then if that didn't get processed, if that just stayed kind of stuck over there with no logical consequence, there could be a forgottenness about the part where we got Sophia back, right? Mm-hmm. We saw Sophia again, whereas mom is now seeing this distress on the kind of right side. Let's talk our way through it. We're going to basically like massage this right brain freak out with some logic and some sequencing to help it move through. Mm. We're going to kind of toggle between these two sides. Whoa, yeah, that feeling, that memory, absolutely. And then this happened and this happened. Do you remember the next part? And starting to put the pieces together so that the flow between those two things, we do have the emotional experience, absolutely. But we also have the sequence of what happened there and the logic of it. We're able to talk about it in a time that's not really a hard right flare-up mm-hmm. feeling, right? And so that child can now store that memory in a way that makes sense to it, wrapping good context around there so that the memory is now, Sophia and I got in a car accident. That was scary. She had a seizure and she had to go in the ambulance. And then the next day we brought her flowers and we saw Sophia again. And then Sophia came back and worked at the house. Mm. And it's now a complete, logical, reasonable story about something very emotional that happened mm-hmm. rather than just storing this pocket of like, whoa, shaky emotion feeling mm. because it didn't get processed. Mm. And so now that child has the practice of feeling really heightened emotions. And then, whoa, both sides of its brain have gotten to sort of like pass the information back and forth. And they've built a bunch of neural connections so that the next time he goes through something, there's already some conversation going on between both of those sides.
Yeah.
Yeah.
that's so good. It's making me think like language is so important mm-hmm. because when a child brings up something that you know was emotional and especially something that you know was a negative emotion for them, mm-hmm. the temptation to like, oh, buddy, you don't have to think about that right now. Mm-hmm. Here, let's look over here. This is better. But seeing it more as an invitation to process it with them and guide them in the process.
Yeah.
Because even if Sophia didn't come home and that was the end of our journey with Sophia, mm-hmm. there would need to be some processing yeah. with that as well.
Absolutely. And then who came and got you? Oh, it was yeah. mommy yeah, and daddy yeah. got you. Uh-huh. And we went home and took yeah. a bath and that felt nicer yeah. for you. And then you slept in your bed and you woke up mm-hmm. and we were still here. And we feel sad. We miss Sophia.
Yeah.
But you're going to be taken care of by the, you know, yes, yeah. absolutely.
The other day we had this happen in our house. I didn't know any of this, but it's helping me understand. Wilson, I guess, had a moment at school where some boys made him feel sad
Aww.
That he was wanting to play with them. And they were talking to each other like, we don't want Wilson to play with
oh,
us.
Sad.
And then they were like, let's make Wilson not play with us. And then whatever, whatever. And then the end of the story is he went and played with the girls. And he said, and then I heard them say, yay, Wilson isn't playing with us. And it was funny because he kept bringing it up. But then the more he would bring it up and the more we would talk to him about it. And then even at dinner, he was like, Eloise, could you pray to God about it? It was so cute. This was like eye-opening for Sean and I. Then she prays to God about it, which we also had not seen happen before. And all she does is tell God the story. She's
amazing.
Like, so God, today at school, Wilson was playing with this person and this person. And she's like, is that how that went? And then Sean and I are just watching this. Like she's just basically validating his whole story. Like mm-hmm. he's like, yeah. And then tell God about when he said this. And then at the end, Wilson like wrapped it up and was like, but I guess I did get to play with the girls and they're pretty nice. And I wanted to play with Box, but playing with what they were playing with wasn't so bad. And maybe tomorrow they'll be nicer to me. Mm-hmm. And by the end of the night, he wasn't hung up on it.
Yeah.
And so it's what I'm learning from you is that he got the process, the back and forth of him like talking, bringing it up so much. Yes. And really the temptation in me was to be like, oh, well, we love you. Like, play with us. We'll play with you. And we did do that. We also like had a moment of like, everybody tell Wilson something you like because he's such a sensitive guy.
For sure. Yes.
But I'm seeing that maybe more so what he needed was just to be guided through all of this, and even just by repeating back to him what the story was, it did something really big in him.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. That makes sense.
Such a good example. And of course you support the deep emotionalness of that right brain. Like, absolutely. Sure. You meet him in the feelings.
Yeah.
It's not, oh, don't be scared about that. We got Sophia back.
Right.
Right. That's dismissive. And that sort of like sends the feelings away.
Yeah.
We want to say absolutely these feelings, and let's connect these feelings to to the context of them. Let's embed them correctly in a proper order, in something that's true, something we can process. There's no sending away of the emotionalness of it. That's sad. It's so sad to get rejected. It feels terrible. Mm. We hate that ever has to happen to anyone. Mm-hmm. We know it happens to all of us because all of us heard you say that and felt the feeling in our body of getting sent away when we were little. And it's terrible, but it's also just part of humanity. That's part of life. Those boys are experimenting with what it feels like to be a group. And part of what we do as humans in a group is
exclude other people. Yeah.
And that's shitty, but it's also part of what we do. And there's a evolutionary usefulness to that also. Mm-hmm. They're experimenting with something, having their own experience. He is over here. There's a high likelihood that at some point in his life, Wilson will also be in a group of three or four people sending somebody else away.
He might have already done it.
He might have already told us about it. Absolutely. That part probably felt great.
Right.
And so he didn't need to bring that part felt easy to process. He went, whoa, interesting. That went through my reward system in my brain differently and just lodged that away. This is the piece that he got a little stuck over on that right side because it was a big emotional experience.
Yeah, it hurts.
Yeah.
Right.
The part that feels good is not a huge emotional experience usually. That's a piece that you're like, okay, cool.
Yeah.
Social rewards, got it.
It also reminds me of just like friendship or any sort of adult kind of when your friend goes through something hard, I know for me the temptation is like, well, let's solve this problem.
Yeah.
You know? But sometimes what they need or what we need, if we're the one struggling, is just like, will you walk with me as I kind of connect the dots between my feelings and logic and truth and fears and like just sort of we have mature brains that can do it ourselves, both of them. But sometimes when we're hurting, we really do need the other person to not minimize and be like, no, but focus on it. Look how beautiful the room is that you're in. Why can't you see it? And you're like, no, I just.
Even if that's the place you arrive at the end of the conversation.
Yes, there's a process.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, interesting. That's so
and great. There's a physical, electric, neurological process that's happening there along with what we experience as the emotional process of talking together. Like your brain is included in this. And I guess that's kind of the overarching point here today is being like, something's actually happening. Like inside the structure of what drives you, there's really something happening there.
Yeah.
That's so important and so valuable.
Yeah.
So let's do some top and bottom because they can seem similar. Like bottom and right have some similarities, right? And top and left have some similarities. But they do something a little different. So like there's emotions over on the right side, but then we're talking about instincts and basic functions and safety and survival down on the bottom.
Okay.
And those things are more closely related than emotions are to, say, higher processing sometimes, right? Like partly because that's why I made the point earlier about them being in the body. Like those are the things that are really monitoring your bodily feelings. And if we are in touch with ourselves, we can realize that like, oh, I actually like most of my emotional feelings, they're not happening way up here in my mind or my brain feeling space. Like I feel emotions in my body. I feel cold when I think about being rejected when I'm a little child like that. You know, like I feel hot when I'm angry. I feel like electricity in my arms when there's that danger sensation, right? Like our feelings are very physical. Mm-hmm. So the back or bottom of your brain is about keeping you alive. And this is why it becomes so uh, so two-year-old. We talk about two-year-olds and their feelings all the time, and that's super important. But really, two-year-olds and their instincts, like that's where you're seeing the big high volatility. Mm. You know, they have feelings about what they want and feelings about the day and stuff like that. But really, these like the tantrums or those running through the house screaming, like whether that's the screaming in the I don't like it sort of the way or the screaming in the I do like it sort of the way. It's kind of the same. Sometimes you get that squeeze impulse from a two-year-old about the baby, whether it's like angry about the baby or whether it's like stoked about the baby. Like that's like the real charge of life stuff. Mm-hmm. All that happens in this bottom space.
Okay.
And the top front part is what's in charge of like, how much of that do we let out? How do we do this? Like, how do we make this social interaction happen? And the back's just like, kiss her, bite her, lick her face, you know?
Yeah.
So I want a good example about this. My favorite reason ever for a tantrum is you threw away my yogurt lid when I wanted to throw away my yogurt lid. Mm-hmm. And the reason it's my favorite is because the tantrum was 45 minutes long.
Oh, wow.
Okay, my other favorite reason was that I knew a little boy who was really obsessed with these little red ballerina slippers that this other girl in class had, and he would like try to take them off her feet. Like he wanted them so bad. He loved them so much. And he would cry forever about these shoes. He would be like, Samantha's shoes. And he would like say it the whole time. And I was like, most of the time when there's like a really long tantrum, they've kind of forgotten about the initial thing. Yeah. They just are actually trapped in that back space and they cannot get out.
Yeah.
And this was like, no, I want those shoes. Oh, it was so sweet. And it took like weeks for him to just like be like, you can't have her shoes. Like you just can't have her shoes. And what that is like that little tiny, the amygdala is this little almond-shaped gray part kind of like dead center in the bottom of your brain that's like, I'm in danger. Mm. And it's so powerful that it takes everything over. Its job is, again, to stop you from touching, like to pull your hand away when you touch something hot. Like its whole job is to bypass everything else, because when you're in absolute danger, your brain and your body work really together to just keep you alive, period. Mm. And so that's when you see like something happens to these little tiny children and their eye, they are gone from behind their eyes. They're gone. It takes them over and they cannot get back up to that front part. And that's where we get so frustrated when we're trying to talk to them, we're trying to convince them out of their feelings, or we're trying to, correct. That's where like, that's why
you meet their energy. So then they're freaking out and then you're freaking out and you're like, crap.
And you're just like,
and we're both freaking
stop
out.
This noise. And now you're yelling. Yeah. You're literally like harmonizing in your yelling. Because also that sound, you made three people. Mm-hmm. The sound of any child crying sets off some alarm bells in my body, right? Mm-hmm. Your body is designed to hear their sound and for that part of your brain to stop the world in order to make sure that they're safe, to stop the earth from turning, to make sure that those specific children are safe. So when Jules makes a sound like she's dying, you also retreat immediately into the back part of your brain because if Jules is dying, then the world has to stop.
Exactly.
So of course it hijacks your whole entire system and sends you into freak out. And if she's doing that eight times a day, of course your nervous system is shot. Of course you feel so stressed and so tired and so mad because she's using it wrong. Mm-hmm. It's an important tool. Mm-hmm. It does something important to you and she's using it incorrectly. So she is firing your alarm bells all day long. Of course it makes you angry.
Yeah.
Are you kidding?
Yeah.
Like that's supposed to be saved for life and death. You shouldn't be feeling that. Mm-hmm. So it makes a ton of sense that your body protests. That's the back part of your brain trying to make you okay, trying to make that thing stop because you're not supposed to be using your system like that. And it knows, like, I shouldn't feel like this all the time. Like, there's a reason inside your brain why it gets so hot and so murky and so impulsive. That impulsive yell, that thing, like, they really tell you not to shake babies because there is just this part of you eventually that's like, stop making that sound. It's insane how your arms feel this impulse to just make that sound stop.
Right.
Like that comes from the back of your, the back and bottom of your brain, mm-hmm. trying to keep you safe. Fortunately for us, we have all developed the ability in the top to know, like, I'm not go, I'm going to use my planning to not shake this child,
right.
because what I actually want is her well-being and my, you know, like, I've got the context and the capacity to keep an open line of communication, to keep that staircase free and clear of debris, so that when the back of my brain is like, shake her, the top of my brain can be like, heard you, no thank you, got it. This is important.
Our means of survival.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. I totally understand. Thank you for telling me. This does have to stop. You're right. Mm-hmm. I'm not just going to light this house on fire so that the screaming stops, you know?
Yeah.
Which is also like respect to you if you're a younger parent. If you're like under 25.
I was thinking that as you were talking.
So much love to you because like.
And so much support needed in order for you guys to be
okay. You're still finishing up that top part of your own brain. And that's fine. It's not a moral failing if you find it a little harder than maybe some older parents to like deal with those like big fire feelings. Yeah. You're finishing up your own brain. That's fine. You can still be a phenomenal parent. Mm-hmm. And actually a little bit extra praise to you for every time you use those executive functions really well. Good on you. Yikes. That's so gnarly.
Wow.
I mean, this is why even just as adults outside of parenting, we look back on some of the stuff that we did when we were 20 and be like, why did you say that to that person? You little, you great.
Why
like,
did you get that tattoo?
Absolutely. I feel so much judgment all the time when in fact, like executive functions were not cooked. Sure. Like the top part of my brain had not finished its literal physical architecture. Mm-hmm. Like it wasn't done. It couldn't have. I couldn't actually have done better in that moment than I did.
Mm. So what does this mean for how we relate when our children are in their downstairs and we are looking at wanting to, I think what I'm gathering is like we're trying to help connect downstairs to upstairs, right?
Yep.
Is that just so that I have context for like my time's not wasted, eventually it all connects, or is there something I'm doing intentionally? Because I really caught like the emotion and the logic part and we're processing and using my words is really valuable. Yeah. Is there something there between the bottom and the top?
Absolutely. When you are able to isolate like which part of the brain is this child in, it would make sense to be like, I should balance them by going to the other part of the brain. But in fact, you should meet them in the part where they are, right? So if you've got a child who's on a big old feeling side, you need to go over there and attune to the feelings so that you then are like in a position of credibility to them almost to be like, yeah, we're on this side. Now come with me over here to this left side and let's build a story around this that makes sense. If your child is down here on the survival side and you're trying to talk to them about something that is reasonable and contextual and planning that wants them to like, come on up here, kid, where it's like, make a moral decision to not hit this other person, like no go, because they think it's survival. So you need to come down to meet them at like a basic instinct, basic survival level, so that you're together, attuning to them where they are. And then you can be the guide who walks them up the stairs slowly over time, over and over and over until they learn how to do that without someone holding their hand. So you have a tantruming two-year-old. Either you're meeting a physical need. You're like, wow, seems like it's really cold down there on the floor. Would you like this cozy blanket to help your physical body feel better? Oh my gosh, if I was yelling like that, my throat would really hurt. Would love to give you this water bottle. They're going to swat it away. That's fine. Mm-hmm. But what you're demonstrating is like, wow, that's, yeah.
I'm meeting you right here.
We're down here in the part where you think that the world is over and that you're dying. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not attuning to you doesn't mean I'm going to join you. Mm. I know that the world is not over and you are not dying. Mm. So I am going to stay in my like reasonable adult space, but I'm not going to brush that part away. I'm not going to now yell at you for yelling. I'm not going to be like pleading or crying with you Like, I can see the zone that we're in, but I'm also not going to start talking at you about why it matters that your sister has feelings too, or like what the reasoning is behind why we can't go to Disneyland today because we were there yesterday. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. That's not reasonable. I need to, like,
can't hear you.
Yeah, be properly acknowledging and meeting you where you are, so that then, now that like there's flow between us, I can sort of help you take the little river ride.
Yeah.
Up these stairs into the front of your brain, and we can start to kind of, then you circle back and do the thing about, Julesy, that was a big deal. What happened there? Yeah. Whoa, that was scary. Did you notice how everybody was crying?
Yeah.
Whoa. That's because everybody loves you. Mm-hmm. And what we noticed is that it looked like you were in so much danger, and we are never, ever going to let you be in danger if we can help it. Look around. Where are we? Do you see the road? Do you see those cars? Are you bigger than those cars? No. Mm. The car would crush your little body. Mm-hmm. I love your little body. Let's feel your little body. Shake her up a little bit. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, all these parts are so important to me. I'm going to keep this skin safe. I'm going to keep these bones safe. I'm going to keep this little jewel's head safe. And you are going to look around because you also are going to keep this little jewel's body safe. Mm. Should we go run out in that road together? And then she will laugh at you. Right, you know, right. And now we're in a, now we are up now in that front zone and we're doing actually all the things. We've now traveled over the process of me touching her body, making her look around, getting present, addressing sort of the like heightened nature of it. Now we're in a space where we can be talking, right?
Yeah.
And she can be practicing like, this is your bike. I love it when you go fast on your bike. I will not let you go fast on your bike if you do not look around. Look around. Think about this. Mm-hmm. And we're practicing building some of that architecture.
That's good. Yeah. That's really good. And I feel like it's also validating to, like, for those of you guys who are listening who can feel a lot like, man, they are really interrupting my day all the time. Mm-hmm. These kids are really quite a bother to the flow of everything we're trying to accomplish, or is the work I'm doing even producing anything good? That's a feeling, is like, is this for something? Because this just feels like a lot of making snacks and cleaning them up and being yelled at for doing exactly the thing they asked me to do. Mm-hmm. But to realize a brain is developing, and like that all of these, even the big tantrum followed by the little rub down and the talk and all of that is leading towards really healthy, beautiful, connected, mature adults who love you really well back because you've been loving them so well in this process. Mm-hmm. I just think it's very, very validating to the work that we do in raising and caring for young kids.
Yeah.
Because at a glance, it doesn't look like this very complex system developing. Right. It just looks like, just a lot of outbursts and crumbs.
Good. I'm glad it feels validating. It felt that way to me too. And it's the system as designed. Mm-hmm. It's not like, oh, accidentally throughout all these mundane things, some of this slips in.
Yeah.
Like, this is meant to happen through everyday caregiving, everyday activities. Like, this life that you're living with these toys and these dishes and these lunches and these bedtimes and these teeth brushings and these snuggles and these climbing of trees and looking at bugs, like, that is the stuff that builds a human brain. Mm-hmm. It's supposed to be. When we do, I think we do all of ourselves, we do children and ourselves a disservice when we try to separate out what is education and what is not education. Mm-hmm. I'm speaking very specifically at the early stages. This is my value for older children as well, but I'm not an expert in older children. Sure. I just have opinions. But this is the case for very young children. And sometimes, maybe we'll do a whole episode someday about how closely related I feel the jobs are of a parent and a preschool teacher, in that they're each doing, like, we think that our jobs are separate, but teaching preschool is so much people training and parenting is 100% of early childhood education. Like, that's what it is. You are building a brain. They are building a brain. The back part of their brain is naturally forcing everything else via life to grow. like, this is what it is. Mm-hmm. And you're doing a great job at it as long as they're alive. Like, yeah. That's literally it. Yeah. If you're keeping them alive, then it's happening. Mm-hmm. And of course, there are wonderful ways that we can support it and grow it and make it more efficient and more sophisticated, mm-hmm. and like increase health. We can increase the integration between these four pieces. But the system is happening. It's running in the background, whether or not you're focused on it.
Yeah.
And I just think that's amazing.
That's so cool. Yeah, it's funny. It's like the picture that I see is like someone who's growing like lush crops or something, but the only part of the process they get to be a part of is like tending to the soil and mm-hmm. nurturing a little plant. They could very easily convince themselves that they don't do much, when anybody who is a part of enjoying all of the fruit of the labor that comes later that mm-hmm. they don't see would be like, wow, that was a very important job. Look at all the nourishment that came from the time you spent in the dirt doing the thing that didn't produce anything yet, because mm-hmm. it all takes time.
Yeah, absolutely.
And with little ones, they're so precious and sweet. And like, I actually love the young ages, I think are so fun, but there is so much of it that is challenging. Mm-hmm. And without knowing some of this, you don't really know. Like, and it can be disheartening too. And you're like, yeah, it's weird. They actually don't even remember these early years. So isn't that kind of sad?
Yes. A lot of people think they're just like waiting for later when it's a human and you can teach it stuff.
Yeah. And I could see that being really sad to the preschool teacher or young, like early childhood caregiver who's like, well, I'm going to invest a lot of my time into a stage of development that the kid won't remember mm-hmm. and the parents will be too busy to remember because they're going to move on and have to care for all the other teachers and coaches and mm-hmm. things. And yet this stage, mm-hmm. I mean, they say that actually 0 to 3 and 0 to 5 specifically are like crucial for development of a person. And so this is hugely important.
Yeah.
It just doesn't always feel important.
Yeah. That was a real story I had to build for myself of being like, I love these children so much. Mm-hmm. Some of them I spend more awake hours mm-hmm. than their mom.
Parents. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And they, because of language, they will not recall these memories. Mm-hmm. However, they don't need to be able to actively with the top front of their brain pull up my name and face in order for me to have been a vital piece mm-hmm. of like building the construction of their brain. Like, they're going to just go out there and live better because I got to do this work with them than if I hadn't. Mm-hmm. And yay.
And even their inner voice to themselves will sound more like the voices spoken over them mm-hmm. from 0 to 3 and 0 to 5 than a lot of others. So like, you've probably got a lot of little ones whose voices are you inside, which is so cute.
I like that. Yeah. I like that so much. So this is not an episode that is supposed to send you away with like extra tasks, like go find activities that build the staircase from the bottom to the top of the brain. No, this is just to know like, this is what's happening in the background. And if you can do it a little more consciously, amazing. You can impact it more specifically. And even just to know, oh, this is what's going on here. Mm-hmm. But honestly, even for myself, there are times when I'm like in a fight all of a sudden with my husband and I don't know why. Mm-hmm. And I'm like picturing a little baby gate trapping me in the back down at the bottom of my brain being like, wow, okay.
Come upstairs.
My perspective is not accurate right now. Mm-hmm. Something feels threatened. We just got to take care of the threatened part and then we'll be able to use the rest of this
MS
and brain.
That's so good. Mm-hmm. Thank you. This was great.
Good. Well done. I'm so glad you liked
it. Friend to friends. Mm-hmm. That was really great.
Oh, my friends. Appreciate it. If you have questions about this, if you have thoughts about this, if you are a neuroscientist and I said anything here that was a lie, and any of you would like to share any of those thoughts or questions, we have a podcast specific email address. It is verygoodenoughpod@gmail.com. Send those things in. Also, if you would like specific support, I would be very, very happy to have you in my one-on-one coaching schedule. Mm-hmm. We just do little one-offs. So it's just, we just jump on the phone, handle some stuff. I'll send you notes and things afterwards so that you can translate that to your parenting partner or just reflect on it. If you want friends, if you want to be more educated about this, if you want some support, if you want just a place to tell your stories so that you're not doing this parenting alone.
If you want more access to me and Lane, and we've got a therapist, and we've got lactation consultants and sleep consultants and experienced moms and new moms, join Very Good Mothers Club, join our online community. And yeah, don't go through this alone. And especially don't feel crazy in the midst of it. If you're going through this young, early parenting stage and you're like, I don't feel like myself, my marriage isn't what it used to be, my just sense of identity isn't what it used to be, like, you're not by yourself. We have a whole group of us who would love to process that with you, and you'll feel better. You'll feel better really fast. That's the cool part. So thanks for being here. We'll see you really soon. Next week, or are you doing bonus episodes too?
I'm also doing bonus episodes on Fridays.
See you Friday.
See you Friday.
Okay. Bye, guys.
Bye.